want to focus more right now on the clinical science. And Wendy, just focusing first on the initial management, then we'll get into what's going on right now in terms of his response. How would you have thought through which TKI to start with in a man like this?
You know, I use a similar criteria. I typically start in a standard risk patient with imatinib. I still think that the drug, in my experience and looking at the data, is probably associated with the fewest toxicities, both short-term and longer-term. But I do consider, similarly to what David just said, if the Sokol score is higher, I do think about a second-generation TKI to start with. In terms of choosing which one, then I look at toxicity profile for an individual patient. But in a patient with standard risk CML, I start with imatinib typically. In a higher risk patient, I would consider a second generation drug.
So Haygop, again, and we're talking outside a protocol setting right now. We know that your first choice and everybody's first choice should be a trial if there is one. But in general, Haygop, how would you think through non-protocol choices of TKI in this patient?
As far as the initial treatment, as you know, four of the five TKIs are safe enough to be used in the frontline setting. Three of them are FDA approved, but when you look at the bosutinib data, the data is identical, except that in this study, they were unfortunate to miss their primary endpoint in the study. So if I were to choose the three tyrosine kinase inhibitors, imatinib, nilotinib, dasatinib would be excellent choices. Today, there's no differential in the price to allow you to choose one or the other because they are all about $120,000 a year. So you choose the drug that appears to have the safer profile and perhaps the more efficacious profile. So one could choose any of those three. As was pointed out in the ENEST-ND, patients with low-risk SOCAL did identically well, whether they were on imatinib or the two doses of the nilotinib. But in the higher-risk SOCAL, there was potential benefits from the nilotinib. Having said this, in all the randomized trials that compare the second generation TKIs, dasatinib or nilotinib to imatinib, there are improvements in the early surrogate endpoints, but the survival is the same because salvage therapy is so effective that it neutralizes the negative effect in these patients. The last point I want to make in this particular patient is I like to see at some point in time a confirmation of the PCR by an additional test, such as a FISH analysis. And in this particular patient, I would probably repeat a bone marrow at the 12 months, do a routine cytogenetic studies, and also the PCR and the mutation. But as long as a patient is maintaining a complete cytogenetic response, I would not change the therapy. This patient is young. We've seen occasionally patients who are young, usually men, who in the first 2 years of TKI therapy develop a sudden lymphoid blastic transformation. And it's rare, but it's unfortunate. And these are the ones that still keep us concerned about the monitoring. And this could be one of them.
So Dave, do you think that general oncologists who are treating CML should be calculating, literally calculating a Sokol score? And if so, how do you calculate it? And how did you calculate it in this man?
I think the Sokol score is helpful for risk stratifying your patient. It's not as critical as, say, the IPSS and myelodysplasia for choosing a therapy, but it is helpful for the reasons that Haygop just mentioned.
What were the clinical characteristics in this man that sort of bumped up his risk?
He had a big spleen, which was part of it. This was his presenting platelet count to his primary care physician, but by the time he saw me, his platelets were quite a bit higher. And so the factors that go into these scores are, you know, the percentage of blasts that are circulating, the basophils, the size of the spleen, and the platelet count.
So Doug, again, about this patient and your general approach to selecting an upfront TKI, do you agree with the algorithm that's kind of coming out here? Is that what you do?
That's exactly the algorithm I follow. I think Wendy made it very clear. You know, I follow this very similar pattern. And like all of our panelists, as long as he's achieving a response, for sure you need a complete cytogenetic response. I do like the comfort of a major molecular response coming down the line, and I'm not sure the timing or whether this person will ever get it, but certainly that's a similar paradigm for frontline therapy that I use.
Charlie, again, do you buy into this algorithm? Is this what you do with your patients?
Yeah, I do. I use imatinib in virtually all people in chronic phase, except for people with higher risk features, which can be defined by the Sokal score and sometimes, frankly, by your nose. The other thing that's going to happen is this decision's going to be taken out of our hands. When imatinib becomes generic, the insurers, in this case, I think appropriately, are going to force us to use imatinib in newly diagnosed patients, and we're probably going to have to argue for the second generation TKIs in newly diagnosed patients in whom we think it's appropriate.